From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Stanton Friedman, Frank Fischino join us. The Flatwoods Monster Case of West Virginia. It's an incredible UFO case. Well, Tommy is underway with his water for gas test, the second one. Now, you know the first one. Before the device was put on his car, he got 17.99 miles to the gallon. Then when we put the water for gas device on his car, he got 16.4. He got less. So we're going to redo it first because I just want to do it twice. And so we now have the results of his miles per gallon without the unit on. And it was 17.45. So that's pretty close to a 17.99. Very close indeed. So I'm pretty sure that that part of his testing is accurate. Now, in another few days, we will start the second part of this test with the device turned back on with some adjustments to it. And we will tell you what the results will be. A Georgia company, now this is in this country, looking to solve America's energy problem, has finally teamed up with the federal government, hoping to make millions of barrels of oil every day from virtually anything that grows out of the earth. It's called Bell Bioenergy. It says it has reached an agreement with the U.S. Defense Department to build 7 test production plants, mostly on military bases, to quickly turn naturally grown material into fuel. Joe Kovacs has written an article called U.S. Green Lights Anything into Oil. He writes for WorldNet Daily. He's an acclaimed journalist. Joe, when does this thing really get going?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, George. This thing is an amazing breakthrough, and we told you about it earlier this year about how J.C. Bell, he's a food expert, and he runs a company down in Tifton, Georgia, and he has genetically modified bacteria, natural bacteria that digests everything. One of the byproducts is methane, and he has come up with this way to genetically modify the bacteria to turn anything that grows out of the earth into oil. This means food waste, yard clippings, wood chips. If it grows out of the earth, it can be converted into hydrocarbons, which means gasoline for your car, oil, diesel. It could be the solution to America's energy problems. Now, he's just signed an agreement now with the U.S. Defense Department to put 7 test facilities into operation. These will be started within the next 60 days or so, and within 18 months, they hope to have some oil being produced from these test facilities to see how cost-effective it can be. They hope to have about 500,000 barrels a day within 2 years, and in 6 months after that, produce 1 million barrels of oil per day.
Well, that's not bad because we're using in this country now, Joe, according to your statistics, what, 13 million barrels of oil a day?
That's the estimate. So, and this is, again, just initial figures of what they're looking at of 1 million barrels per day. It could go over that. So the sites will be located all across the country at different military bases, and it will actually be test facilities.
How long do you think it'll take to get these 7 test production plants up and running?
Well, according to J.C. Bell, he says they should have all the plants running within 60 days, but that doesn't mean,
jeez,
you know, cranking out the oil. They got to get these things set up. But he believes that within 18 months or so, they will actually start manufacturing oil directly from waste and, again, build up to about 500,000 barrels per day within 2 years and then 1 million barrels per day within about 2.5 years. So, I mean, this is fairly rapidly. You know, everybody talks about drill, drill, drill. We're looking at, you know, 8 to 10 years down the line. But this is a way to take waste products. That this is a completely natural process, by the way. He discovered it by looking at the cows on his property and thinking how they digest their food and how it turns into methane gas, which is a hydrocarbon. And he came up with a way. He said, now, how could I get this digestion process to work faster? So he genetically altered the bacteria, which is in the cow's stomach. He altered it, and now it rapidly digests the bacteria.
Well, I'm sure he's going to get some venture capital money there, too. Thanks, Joe. Joe Kovacs, writing this article for WorldNet Daily. That's an incredible story, and we'll just continue to watch the progress of this. Russia, by the way, has pressed the United States to choose between what they say a real partnership with Moscow or an illusionary relationship with our ally, Georgia. Washington said it's sticking with Georgia. As to choosing, the United States has made it very clear, according to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, that the United States is standing by the democratically elected government of Georgia. The United States has rejected an Israeli arms request that would have improved Israel's capability to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. The U.S. has also warned Israel against attacking, saying such a strike would undermine American interests. This is a strange story. The unsourced report also says the U.S. demanded that Israel give it a heads up if it decides to strike Iran. The chairman of the Arkansas Democratic Party was shot and killed after a man opened fire inside party headquarters in Little Rock today. Chairman Bill Guatney was shot multiple times in the upper body by a man who later escaped in a blue truck. He died 4 hours later at the University Hospital, Guatney did. The police eventually shot and killed the suspect in a 30-mile chase. His name was Timothy Dale Johnson, 50 years old. Apparently, he worked at a Target store, had been fired for writing graffiti on a store wall, and then he probably just lost it. Douglas Hagman reports on his website, Homeland Security U.S., that the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, the Colorado State Police, the Colorado National Guard, and other state and local law enforcement agencies are involved in investigating the death of a man found in a Denver hotel. His name, Salman Diri, 29 years old. He's a Somalian native. He had been living in Canada. He was dead for at least 6 days when found inside the room at the Burnsley Hotel. What's so unusual about all this? Law enforcement sources say police found two large bottles of a powdered cyanide-based substance inside of the room, in addition to other materials consistent with the storage and handling of cyanide. No passport was found on him or inside his room. The Burnsley Hotel is not far away from many events associated with the Democratic National Convention, scheduled in Denver later this month. Soul legend Isaac Hayes, who died at the age of 65 on Sunday, was killed by a stroke. The musician's doctor listed it on his death certificate. Hayes, who suffered a stroke in 2006, was being treated for high blood pressure. The Oscar winner was found by family members at his home, lying next to a treadmill, which was still switched on. In what might be considered a new low for the housing market, a home in Detroit is sold for $1. The home close to the Detroit City Airport was foreclosed upon last summer after it was purchased for $65,000 in 2006. The bank was so eager to just get rid of this property, they listed it for $1. Took 14 days for a local woman to buy it. She now has to pay back taxes. And a woman in Stockholm is trying to sell a flat along with its contents that include her stubborn stepfather who refuses to move. She inherited the top floor studio apartment when her mother died, so she wants to sell it, and she's put it up for sale, but the 52-year-old man isn't leaving. The Cassini spacecraft, Enceladus, has remarkable new close-up images of the Saturn moon, and they apparently were captured during a flyby on August 11th, with the probe passing above the icy terrain at a distance of just 50 kilometers at the closest approach. The pictures are on coasttocoastam.com as our feature story. Richard C. Hoagland on with us. They look like some crevices of where water used to go, Richard.
That's exactly what they are. This is the area of the southern pole of Enceladus, which is a little moon orbiting Saturn. It's the size of Connecticut, George. It's only 300 miles across. Now, classic solar system theory says that all little tiny icy objects, that diminutive, that small, have long since died geologically. Nothing should be going on. They should be dead as a doornail, rock hard, 300 below zero, et cetera, et cetera. So when Cassini arrives in the Saturn system, you know, a few years ago, following on the Voyager flybys many years before, it found that Enceladus is spewing an extraordinary amount of water, liquid water, in huge geysers from a region around its little south pole called the Tiger Stripes, indicating that there's this rifted terrain at the south polar region. Well, this flyby by Cassini on Monday, 30 miles above the surface, took astonishing close-up images showing things as small as 30 feet, the size of a house. And you can see these rifts, these canyons, and we don't know yet whether they actually image the area where the water, the geysers are coming up. But, of course, this raises all kinds of huge questions. What kind of energy source has been keeping this water liquid inside Enceladus for, as Carl would say, billions and billions of years? Or is there another even more extraordinary set of possibilities? And that's what these new images and data are supposed to answer.
And to whet your appetite, this is just one of the many stories that Richard C. Hoagland will uncover along with two other panelists when he brings us a full four-hour show next week. Richard, thank you. And a story that we've been reporting on, these astonishing photos of what some claim to be a dead Bigfoot stored in an ice chest. Well, there's going to be a news conference in California on Friday. Lorne Coleman, cryptozoologist, will be there. We will get his full report Friday night, first hour. Don't miss it. These pictures now have gone all around the planet. People have been speculating just what the heck could this creature be? Is it a guy in a costume who was in the wrong place at the wrong time? Is it indeed a Bigfoot? Who knows? But we'll hopefully shed more light on this story for you on Friday. And a British scientist is still anxiously awaiting the results of DNA tests on hair claimed to be from a Yeti after initial examination showed it had human and ape-like characteristics. Ian Redman, a biologist and an expert in ape conservation, said the hairs found in the Indian jungle resembled samples collected by conqueror Sir Edmund Hillary in the 1950s. RFID chips, we've talked about them before on Coast to Coast. They're everywhere, in our clothes, in our shoes, in packaging, and soon maybe in you. In a moment, Catherine Albrecht joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here she is, Dr. Catherine Albrecht. She's widely recognized as one of the world's leading experts on consumer privacy, retail issues, and those radio identification technology tags. She holds a doctorate in education from Harvard University. She's been on this program before, and it continues to flourish as she speaks about these chips. Catherine, how are you?
Hey, George, we're doing great. I'm actually speaking to you from a car that is cruising home from a protest today in New York City. And we're going to get back home to New Hampshire, probably looks like around 3 in the morning our time, but it's been absolutely well worth every bit of it because we had we made quite an impact on the RFID industry today.
I'm sure you protested quite a bit. Now, tell me specifically what you're opposed to here, Catherine.
Well, the event that I went to today and that we made our feelings known was an event promoting the use of RFID, radio frequency identification tracking microchips in clothing and shoes, of all things. And what they did, they got a whole bunch of people together from all over the world at the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan and rented out a big conference room and had a big conference with lots of sessions emphasizing that they believe that it's time to start putting these things into our clothing and shoes, you know, pressing them between the seams of the clothing or into the soles of our shoes. And of course, George, as you know, and as your listeners know from following this issue for many years now, that if they actually do that, that's going to be a privacy nightmare.
What do they want with all these RFID tags and clothes and shoes and who knows where?
Well, I think the ultimate goal from their perspective, and again, it depends on who you ask within these huge corporations. If you ask the supply chain people who manage products going in and out of warehouses, they'll say, well, all we're trying to do is to be able to keep better track of our products. You know, we're bringing all these things over from China. They're going into big distribution centers and warehouses and on semi-trucks. And if we have the this tracking technology built directly into the clothing or attached onto the clothing, then that'll make it possible for us to track and identify and locate these items in our supply chain. But if you ask the people on the marketing side and sort of the visionaries within the industry, what you'll hear them say is kind of a different story, is they'll say, well, once we get the RFID tracking devices onto the clothing and shoes, then we can start using them for a whole variety of uses. And, of course, the most disturbing of those involve tracking people for marketing, for Big Brother, so the government can keep a closer track on closer watch on people. And one of our big concerns, of course, is that criminals could abuse this as well. So I think that the folks at this conference today really were not seeing the big picture. But if they move forward with their plan to track these, to tag these items for their inventory purposes, they're going to open us all up to a 1984 world of total surveillance.
When did RFID tags in these chips start making their way into the marketplace, Catherine?
Well, back in 1999, Procter & Gamble got together with the engineers at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, mm-hmm. and brought a whole bunch of sponsors on board who paid, you know, $500,000 apiece to develop this technology to take radios, essentially little tiny radio transponders, and make them small enough, efficient enough, and cheap enough that eventually their goal is to use them as a replacement for the barcode. So the idea is that every physical object on Earth would have one of these things built directly into it. And their big picture is what they call the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things being that in the same way now, you can log on to the Internet and you've got all of these nodes all over the world connected up with all this information at your fingertips. They envision doing the same thing with all the physical objects on the world, that you could log on to a database and you would have information about, you know, where did that Calvin Klein sweater wind up? You know, who's got it hanging in their closet, and pinpoint things literally to that level of detail.
And look, it's moving. You know, the sweater's moving. So whoever bought it must be going out with it on today. They'll know
that. Well, it doesn't.
To
clarify just a little bit, the way the tracking works is it's not like a GPS.
Not yet.
The way it would work is more the vision that they have is putting things like IBM's person tracking unit. That's something they developed in a patent that would go in doorways and floors and ceilings in very specific locations so that as you walk around past one of these devices, it would say, aha, we just saw Catherine Albrecht and all her stuff and her shoes, and we inventoried the contents of her purse and her pockets and the size and color of her underwear, and we just saw all those things associated with her entering into, I don't know, the Atlanta courthouse or the Walmart in you know, Poughkeepsie or whatever it might be.
Catherine, is your phone going to hold up for phone calls a little bit later on? What do you think?
Absolutely. I'll be delighted.
Now, in terms of the growth and momentum of this technology, you've been protesting this for a number of years now. Do more clothes and shoes and items like that have these chips than before we started becoming more aware of it?
It's interesting. There's really been a shift. Back in 2003, your listeners may recall that we launched, we sort of fired the first shot across the bow of the RFID wars, as it were, when we launched a campaign, a boycott against Benetton. That's the Italian clothing manufacturer
right. That
sells clothing in like 130 countries around the world. And they made an announcement in 2003 that they were going to put 15 million of these tags into their products and sell them as women's clothing. And we protested that. We were able to get them to cancel that plan through just worldwide outrage. Now, that was 2003, and that really had a chilling effect across the entire industry for a number of years, where they really stayed away from this idea of microchipping consumer products. What's happened steadily and slowly is they've kind of crept back, and now they're meeting behind closed doors. You know, it was like $1,000 to even attend this conference. So all of the people in there are, you know, they're all company representatives, and there's really not a lot of light being shined on this for the public in terms of where they're putting these in clothing. So the big shift has really been that now they're working on using RFID for anti-theft purposes. And the frightening aspect of that is if you hide an RFID tag, or if you put an RFID tag onto, say, a sweater or a pair of shoes to prevent it from being stolen, then you've got to hide that device inside of that clothing.
Sure.
Item. Because if you put it on the outside and it can be easily removed, then it doesn't solve your theft purpose.
That's right.
And what has us very, very concerned is that Sensormatic and Checkpoint Systems, the two big anti-theft companies that specialize in hiding anti-theft tags today deep within products, you know, literally sandwiching them between the layers of shoes, those are the very people who are prominently featured at this conference and getting up there and talking about how beneficial it would be for all of these clothing items to begin containing RFID tags that could be trackable.
How small are these tags right now?
Well, they're I'd say about the size of a postage stamp or maybe twice as big. The chips themselves that contain the data are actually incredibly small. The smaller they can get them, the cheaper they are.
Oh, yeah, and they will get smaller. Stay with us, Catherine. We'll be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Stanton Friedman joins us, the father of modern-day ufology, along with Frank Fascino, as we talk about the flying saucer air wars of 1952. But when we come back, we'll continue chatting with Catherine Ulbrich about these RFID chips, maybe the sign of the beast, and we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know how interested we are, Catherine, in prophecy and end times. And when you hear the word chips and implants, you think of the sign of the beast, don't you? Well, we've lost Catherine, Tom, so you're going to have to get her right back. And then we'll get the calls. I knew she was on that phone, and I knew it would go on her. But let's go to you, Dan. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. I may have to answer her questions for you, Daniel.
Oh, thank you, George. What a pleasure it is to talk to you. Your guest on tonight talking about the RFID chips. And my question was, when will we possibly have some sort of device that we could, you know, deactivate these things if we buy products?
Now, that's an interesting situation. Catherine, when will we ever have devices that can deactivate these chips?
Well, you know, that's kind of a two-part question. The first part is, obviously, we do want to be able to deactivate them if they wind up on our products. We're trying to prevent getting to that point, because I think what the industry would really like to have happen is for this to become sort of the status quo, so that there's an RFID tag on literally everything, and then it becomes your responsibility in terms of shifting the burden onto the consumer to do all the deactivation. And if you think about the number of objects in your life and the idea of having to individually take every pencil out of a pack of pencils, or every pen or every light bulb or every single physical object you buy, they know that you're going to become exhausted and you're just going to, you know, give up. So I kind of question whether that's the direction we want to go, and we've been pushing for preventing it from getting there. As far as the deactivation goes, it's actually not easy to deactivate an RFID tag. The deactivatable tags, as it were, are more expensive, and the industry doesn't want to spend the money. It costs an extra couple of pennies, or even, you know, in some cases double or triple the amount, to be able to provide that ability within a tag. And that, you know, that's not, they're looking for cheap, easy, and efficient, and deactivation is really not in their long-term plan. The other piece of this is that the industry would very much like to have your RFID tag live and functioning in everything you buy, so that it would serve as the receipt if you wanted to return the item or get it serviced under warranty. So they really envision a world where we are walking around with these things active and pulsating all the time.
Many of these items are made in China. Would they put these chips in the items in China? Or would they do it later after they've been shipped into the country?
They do, and that's the concern that we have right now with these anti-theft companies, Checkpoint Systems and Sensormatic, because they do something called source tagging, which means they go directly to the factory stores where things are produced. Let's say you've got Wilson Sporting Goods or Toys R Us or Babies R Us, all of which are working with these companies to use RFID right now. And what they'll do is they'll go directly to the factory where the things are being manufactured, so that they can insert the tags directly inside of the object. They can put it into the plastic molding so that the plastic literally hardens around the tag, so you would never be able to find it or remove it. And that is happening in China. And, you know, speaking of China, George, I should point out that the nation of China last year was a really chilling lesson, I think, for the rest of the world in terms of RFID use. They issued over 1 billion RFID tagged ID cards to their citizens last year, and in the course of doing that, really collected an immense amount of very invasive information. They're putting on these chips people's entire employment history, their medical status, their reproductive status, even the name and phone number of their landlord. All of this encoded on these chips that can be read by the authorities silently and invisibly without their knowledge. And it was all U.S. companies that funded it. Dell, Cisco, HP, all these U.S. companies were over there providing that technology to China. And if we're not careful, they're promoting the same thing for use in this country as well. So, you know, we've really got to look at government use of this, not just corporate use.
Let's go to our first-time caller line, David, driving around in Virginia. Welcome to the program, David.
Yes, I'm actually in Portsmouth, Virginia now. My name is David, and home in Louisville, Kentucky.
All right.
And actually like a two-part question. I've heard of, you know, the chips in people, and God forbid, I don't want to have a chip implanted in me. But how is it that one would be able to attribute a number, let's say a number 666, to a RFID chip?
Let me see if I can answer the first part of your question here before we get too far afield. The issue of implanting microchips in people, for listeners who are not yet aware, there is an implantable version of radio frequency identification, or RFID. It's called the VeriChip. It's an RFID tag encapsulated in a capsule of medical-grade glass that can be injected into the flesh. And we bought you a little time on that because I spent a year of my life working with the Associated Press to get out the news that we, of course, first reported here on Coast to Coast, that those RFID injectable devices cause cancer in 1 to 10% of laboratory animals they're injected into. So that one bit of news alone caused that company's stock value to drop from close to $11 a share to down around $1 a share.
Whoa.
And they only made, in the first quarter of 2008, they only made $3,000 total off of their chipping operations. So I think that currently is at least dormant. It's not an active threat. Taking that to the next step, though, how would you incorporate an RFID tag with a number into a person? Each one of those implantable microchips contains a unique ID number. And when you look at the biblical prophecy, which, of course, appears in Revelation chapter 13, verses 16 through 18, that talks about a time when all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and bond or imprisoned or enslaved, would receive a mark or a number on their right hand or their forehead, and that would be the number of man or of a man, and it would be 666. And then the Bible tells us, let he who has understanding understand. Well, the Bible also tells us that those prophecies of the end time will not become clear until the time is right. And in the same way that you've got some of the brightest minds in history trying to decipher that, Isaac Newton devoting over 1 million words to trying to understand prophecy, the time wasn't right. He couldn't even figure out how you could buy and sell with a number. Well, that's now very clear. You can ask a 9-year-old, they say, well, you use a credit card. So I think that 666 part will become clear, and it will be as clear as buying and selling with a number is today when the time is right. But for right now, we just don't know. And one conjecture I would offer is that when you read the Greek in which that's written, it says the number of man or the number of a man. You can read it either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought that the number of man could be your DNA turned into a number, and then it would be unique to each person.
Hmm.
Now, the second half is actually, you know, we read also in the same book, and also another book in the Old Testament about God's people being sealed. And with the mark, so to speak. And we in studying that, everybody has pretty much come to the conclusion that, well, that's not a literal sealing of God. It's spiritual. And so I'm wondering, why would we take then the opposite, the number of the beast, and turn that into a literal number instead of also a spiritual?
Well, because the Bible is extremely clear on that there actually is a process of worship and receiving a mark and a number without which you cannot buy and sell. And so there's a commerce aspect, there's a political aspect to that, and there's a pretty tangible physical aspect. It also says that those who refuse will be beheaded. And so in order to have that occur, you really have to have a system in which there's a visual way of distinguishing people who agree to it and people who don't.
Next up, let's go to Jack in Arizona, west of the Rockies. Jack, you're on with Catherine Albrecht.
I'm a huge fan of the show, been a listener for years.
Thank you, Jack.
But the reason I called tonight, and because Catherine had named some names, many, many moons ago in the 90s, I worked for a series of companies, and a lot of the stuff, RFID has spun off some pretty amazing inventions, which were haphazard to say best, like wireless internet to be one. RFID tags were initially created, she's right, with MIT. The drivers behind them, though, were barcode companies, namely Symbol Technologies and Intermec, which is no longer around. Intermec was gobbled up after they spun off Aeronet Wireless. They were built specifically for Walmart. Walmart had an idea, and the productivity gain was the driver. Everything else after that, the Big Brother component, came later. But Walmart had an idea that was evolutionary, to say the least. They had a vetting process for you to become a vendor, and you needed these RFID tags for their smart warehouses. And the idea was, we can cut out an entire layer of management if these RFID tags tell our smart warehouses how much of whatever item it is, and our vendors automatically replenish, and we cut out an entire layer of management. Only when they can go global.
I'm glad you're bringing up Walmart, because Walmart really has driven, if you want to kind of think about the mark of the beast as heading towards this system in which you won't be able to do any commerce at all, the place where most people are doing commerce in terms of buying and selling today is at Walmart. They are the biggest retailer on the globe. And so buying and selling, there's really no place more relevant than Walmart. And what's interesting to note is that in 1984, of all years, Walmart issued its first mandate to its suppliers that they had to use the barcode. The barcode was first developed in the 1970s, but it really didn't become widely popular or widely in use until Walmart issued that mandate. And at that point, all of their suppliers said, okay, well, you know, Walmart's telling me if I want to keep selling to them, I'm going to have to put a barcode on my products. And that one action by Walmart really drove sort of the dominoes falling. And now there's hardly a product you can buy without a barcode. Now, in 2005, Walmart did the same thing with RFID. So I think it's very interesting that the number one largest buying and selling outlet on the globe is so actively moving towards this numbered system, and the system that ultimately, I believe, will lead or is one of the mileposts on the way to the mark of the beast.
Go ahead, Jack.
But are you still there?
Yeah.
So the other crazy part of this is they enlisted a company, Telzon, out of Ohio, to create a smart warehouse, which they actually have a few of those warehouses. They're their distribution centers now. And the theory behind it was, we're going to have these RFID tags, which essentially were, like, in the beginning, a reflector on a bicycle, something that actually couldn't transmit but could only reflect a signal off of it. That was the lead algorithm that they ran with. What it became, once they shrunk the chips later on, they needed a message. They needed a way to actually transmit the message, the two-way radio. And essentially, that became Aeronet, now a wholly owned subsidiary of Cisco. We have Wi-Fi routers in our houses now because of this. But really, it was the laziness of Walmart, which is why we have this problem. Walmart didn't want to deal with their vendors, except for when they came in and pitched. That's the only time they wanted to deal with them. Once they agreed to buy from them, they wanted their vendors to do all of the heavy lifting. And the only way that Walmart could keep their eye on the prize, their product, was these tags.
Well, and Walmart really has a bigger vision, and I'm glad that you brought up the whole issue of wireless and Wi-Fi. And, you know, I've been really thinking a lot about how all of this stuff is going to come together, because, you know, looking at the trajectory and the path that we're on, I really believe that all of this Wi-Fi, all of this internet, all of this interconnectivity, the Internet of Things in which everything will be connected, is really part of a much larger plan. And when I look at that larger plan, if you think about it from a spiritual and a biblical perspective, you've got God's world in which God created all things to be free. And, you know, animals, plants, trees, people, none of them were numbered. If God wanted us to have numbered microchips in them, he certainly could have created us that way, but he didn't. And when I look at this system that is being planned by these big corporations and essentially by, you know, Satan operating among us, so I would view that, they're really moving us to a point where everything will be numbered and become part of sort of a different body of objects on the earth. And you could almost see it. I had this realization. I was in a library at Harvard, and I saw a map on the wall, a big poster, and I thought that it was a nervous system, a human nervous system. It looked like the dendrons and the axons. I'm probably not getting that right, but it looked all sort of interconnected. And as I approached closer, I realized that this thing that I thought was a living nervous system was actually a map of the internet. And they look very shockingly similar when you look at them from a distance. And then I thought, okay, well, if that's really the plan, that we are all sort of becoming a body for Satan to inhabit on this planet, then that's the way that would come together, that every individual object becoming part of that system would be like a cell in the body. And you have sort of the broader network linking all the way down to the individual item. So the earlier caller asked, you know, how does a person become part of the, you know, take the mark of the beast? And I would say by agreeing to sign up and become part of that body.
So beyond the privacy issues, then, you truly believe there's another evil motive behind this?
Absolutely, beyond any shadow of a doubt. And all you have to do is look at the trajectory and the fact that, you know, we are moving so quickly in that direction that I don't think it really takes a lot of theological insight or wisdom to see that we're moving to a point where we all will be numbered cogs in a large unit. And I really believe that RFID is just a very baby step in that direction. I don't think RFID is the mark of the beast, but I think it certainly is a signpost showing us that that's where we're going to go. You know, when you talk to these guys, they want to number every animal on every farm. They want to number every tree in the forest. They're already numbering every salmon in the entire Pacific Northwest and having them go through these giant reader antennas as they make their way to spawn. The vision for this is absolutely every physical object, every animal, every tree, every bug. I don't know how far they're going to go, but everything becoming part of this big system. And it's really difficult not to see that system as its own sort of living thing. And it's not at all what God intended for us to be.
Let's see if we can get one more call in, at least west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Brandon.
How you doing, George? Catherine, how you doing?
Good. Hey, good to talk to you, Brandon.
It's great to talk to both of you. I have more of a comment. My brother works for a retail company, and they're actually in the process of getting these things installed right away. And from what I understand, the chips will be installed into the fabric, and it's really designed for inventory purposes because they have a backstock. And so from the backstock, as soon as one of the products is sold, as soon as it's sold and goes out the door, they can bring it down. But it also actually identifies exactly where it's located in the store. So say, for example, somebody grabs a shirt from one rack and then brings it over to where the pants are at, they can identify, okay, well, that shirt's out of place, so we need to put it back into place. And from what I understand, he's actually working on that project right now.
Yeah, and this was the really disturbing thing that caused me to drive down to Manhattan and bring a group of protesters outside this event, is these are folks who are really sitting at the table here planning to do exactly that. And the public is not being told. In state after state, they've defeated our legislation that would require labeling, so they'd have to tell you where there's an RFID tag in one of your garments or sewn into your clothing. And when I saw the list of people who are involved in this, the list of companies, it really made me say, you know, we need to get back on the bandwagon and remind these companies that they answer to us, their consumers, and if they move forward with this technology, we won't do business with them.
Catherine.
And, you know, these are big companies. This is like New Balance Athletic Shoes, doing a trial since last year, Reebok, Levi Strauss, American Apparel, Jockey. Can you imagine having these things in your underwear? I mean, they can read it right through your pants.
Well, if they're those big ones, they'll hurt. What's your website? give us your website.
Website, spychips.com. Of course, I would urge people, if they want to learn more, get a copy of Spy Chips. It is just as current today as the day we wrote it. And in fact, it was before its time, because all the things that we talked about in the industry's own words, they're now deploying. So I would urge people, go to spychips.com, get a copy of Spy Chips. You can also find my daily radio show, and I'll be talking about this tomorrow from 10 to noon Eastern at WTPRN.com. That's We the People, WTP. KatherineAlbrechtRadioNetwork.com. If you lose sight of that, just look up Catherine Albrecht Radio and you'll find me.
You got it. Thanks, Catherine. We'll be back in a moment with Frank Fescino and Stanton Friedman on Coast to Coast AM.